The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, Premier League Match Day 5. Pack it up, pack it in. Let me begin. What happens when Man City visit the Hammers' House of Pain? Plus, Swindon, they came to get down. Man United, Brighton and Arsenal, when your bogeys are toffees. Plus, the Premier League's most popular surname, Scotland, England, Richarlison, and how many is too many exclamation marks? It's the Totally Football Show.
Thursday the 14th of September. Hello, listener. Here we are in the studio with Charlie Eccleshare of The Athletic.
Hello, Jimbo.
Natalie Gedra of ESPN Brazil.
Bonjour.
And Benji Lagnado, CEO of Pickfair. It is CEO, isn't it, Benji?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
Bonjour. How was that?
What should we say? 10 out of 10.
Era Rosh Hashanah.
Ah, yeah. Sort of. Yeah.
It's about to be the year 5784?
Sounds about
or
right.
Or three, maybe
it's
three.
In that sort of ballpark, yeah, yeah.
But who's counting?
Who's counting? Yeah. It's a lot of numbers.
Certainly are. Everyone have a... Natalie, we haven't spoken to you, I think, since a fateful night in Qatar.
Oh my God, yes, that's true. Yes, no, it's been long. Yeah, just a lot of work. Nothing.
A lot of work?
Yeah, nothing changed much.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yes,
it have is you good. Enjoyed the start of this season?
Yes. So a lot of work again.
Right.
Yes. No, went to Australia, got back straight to the Premier League.
Oh, you went to the Women's World Cup.
Yes,
fantastic.
Yes, I did. Yeah, it was amazing.
So much to talk about.
Yes.
Good. Excellent. Have you been busy, Charlie? We've seen you more recently, of course.
Yeah. I was off last week in South of France, which was lovely.
South of France, was it?
Yeah, yeah. Près d'Avignon.
Ah, nice. Did you do the train or you fly?
No, where we flew to Montpellier and then drove down from there.
Oh, wicked. Nice.
It was great, yeah. It was just after the... transfer deadline had closed, so right. It had been a crazy month, so it was nice to unwind.
You and Europe's agents just signing it on the Côte d'Azur, yeah.
Very much so.
Magnificent. And Benji? All good with Pickfair, the number one picture. How would you describe it?
It's Squarespace for photographers. This is fantastic. So, there I was 10 years ago with a thought and a dream. With 900,000 photographers, and you should join them.
When you gave yourself that CEO title, did you... There's that Homer Simpson bit where he gives himself the title of vice president and then corrects to junior vice president.
You have to choose a title, but I was the only employee. So it did feel slightly weird.
Grand vizier.
Yeah, that would have been better. Faith leader.
Acting CEO.
Spiritual leader.
Do you have any pictures of Près d'Avignon in your...
thousands,
library.
Probably tens of thousands.
I bet you haven't got
beautiful
any
beautiful pictures.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay, because Charlie's just, you know,
could add some in.
Load them in. It's really easy to load them in, isn't it?
Oh
Benji?
My God, you wouldn't believe how speedy our technology is.
And then
you could set up your store, charlieeccleshare.pickfair.com. Show off your lovely pictures to all your friends. Logistics, you say? Well, that's covered by Pickfair. Printing. I can't believe we're doing this. this is my dream.
I mean, it is all going to get cut, but
yeah.
Hey, listener. I know you're enjoying that, but I want to move on to what's coming up this weekend with what we're calling Premier League Match Day 5. Premier League, the situation. City are in the lead, but four teams are snapping at their heels, just 2 points behind. That's Spurs, Liverpool, Arsenal and West Ham, who face City this weekend at the London Stadium. Woo! Brighton, who are 1 point further back, host Man United. Meanwhile, United are down in 11th place. They're one of three big underperformers from the early rounds, alongside Chelsea in 12th place and Newcastle, who are down in 14th place after three straight defeats. Newcastle will be hosting Brentford on Saturday, whilst Chelsea the following day are up against Bournemouth. Down at the bottom, Sheffield United and Everton lie either side of that dotted line, both on 1 point. The bottom two are Luton Town and Burnley, both yet to record a point, but both with a game in hand. We're going to begin in East London.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Possibly the big game of this weekend, invisible to UK audiences, but, you know, if you're somewhere else in the world, tune in when 3 o'clock at the London Stadium, West Ham, host Man City. Natalie, you're actually going to go there, aren't you?
Yes, I'll be there.
And probably will Pep be there as well after his back surgery?
Yes, he went back to training the team.
Okay.
So he's back in England. He looks healthy, fit, and yes, he's ready to go.
He has never lost
against West Ham. Is that right, Benji? Apart from a Carabao Cup penalty shootout, which is not technically a defeat, etc. and so on.
Sounds about right, yeah.
But how optimistic are you?
I'm quite excited, actually. I think this is going to be City's hardest game of the season so far. I mean, it's an admittedly young season. I just think that West Ham are like sculpted into a team made to play against Man City.
Ooh.
So, I mean, we've already sort of played a Man City-shaped team this year in Brighton, who had, what, 87% possession, and we smashed them 3-0. So I think it's unlikely that we'll get anything from City, because we rarely do. But I think we are primed to maybe give it a damn good go. I think Pep will actually be worrying about West Ham, which is a real compliment to where West Ham are so far this season.
What will he be worrying about? Ward-Prowse, Paqueta?
Yeah, the ability to kind of soak up possession, break it up, and then break. Like the Bowen goal against Brighton, sort of, which I think everyone has probably seen, exemplifies what we're about. We had like bustling Antonio back at left back, you know, trying, you know, working his ass off for the team, breaking it up. Lovely ball out to Benrahma, lovely ball to Bowen, and we got the quality to punish teams on the break. And actually, Alvarez as well from Ajax has been a brilliant addition. And interestingly, I think the player he most reminds me of is Rodri. He's maybe got a bit more kind of aggression than Rodri, which you need if you're playing for West Ham rather than Man City. But he's a lovely player. He's kind of got everything.
Speaking of people reminding people of people, Paqueta has made the most tackles and committed the most fouls in the Premier League this season. Liquidator 22 says, with Paqueta topping the tackle stats this season, says Liquidator 22, should we now start dubbing him Moises Caicedo? Caicedo.
You see. I like it.
That's what a West Ham fan thinks, Natalie, about this game. What do you think is going to happen?
No, I think regarding Paqueta is interesting, because when he got here, and all Brazilian fans, they really know him from his offensive skills. And when he got to West Ham, I remember interviewing him and him saying, oh no, David Moyes is telling me to just have a more offensive approach and play closer to the box and have more freedom. People know that this is my style of play. But then all of a sudden, he just started developing these defensive skills, which actually happens a lot when we have Brazilians coming, especially to the Premier League, mm-hmm. because they come here with all this freedom and creativity, and now they have to become these players inside a structure. So sometimes it takes time, and Paqueta has been developing this in the national team.
Yeah, he obviously plays deeper there as
well,
isn't
he? Yes, exactly. He plays deeper there. So it can benefit the national team. Of course, he wasn't with the national team now on this international break during the betting allegations. But it's interesting to see the type of player he's developing at West Ham.
And he loves a scrap. I don't think he's been told to get stuck in, and you know, he's leading all these kind of like, you know, tackling stats or whatever. He just can't help himself. Like he wants to get the ball back every time he loses it. I still think something I thought that potentially tells a bit of a story against him. I mean, at the Battle of Alkmaar last year, when it was Nolsey defending the West Ham fans. So just before that, because it was the players' area, the players had jumped over the hoardings to go and like defend their families. And there was Paqueta in the middle of it, like really scrapping around.
I was not surprised.
But
at
also,
all.
Then it turns out afterwards, he had no family there whatsoever.
Yeah.
he just wanted
to jump in. But that is part of his game that we weren't expecting, but we love. Because especially in the absence of Declan Rice,
yes,
like
exactly.
we need to kind of share around the responsibility of tackling.
Yeah, he was smart taking that role, especially after Rice's departure.
It is quite funny that even in 2023 and how much football's been homogenized, we still have this gift to the world in this country is to like get people scrapping and tackling and fighting on the pitch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm curious. You two will know this a lot better than me, but like how good he was last season, because in my mind, he maybe had like a slowish first half of the season.
Yes, he did.
So then when I saw him being linked with, I'd slightly missed how good he was in the second half. And it just makes me feel, and then he's being linked with like an £80 million move
to City.
Yeah.
But it feels like nowadays that the gap between being we can't get a fee for this player, can we loan him with an option to someone, to then being like 80 million, 100 million, feels like so thin. You need like half a good season and then everyone's like, yeah, I want.
I think Paqueta watchers would have known that there's a serious player there for a long time. And it was that kind of natural bedding in period in the first 6 months. And also, he's not going to like a team that is like known to nurture like creative number 10s. He was going to a David Moyes team. So it was always going to take a little while. And actually, to David Moyes' credit, he was unable to do this with Scamacca. He worked out how to get Paquetá in, and now he's pretty much first name on the team sheet. And very cleverly, West Ham delayed the kind of initial hearing around the betting allegations to like 3 days after the transfer window was shut. So they knew that at a minimum, they're going to keep Paquetá through to January, hopefully to the end of the season. We'll
see. He's kind of in this limbo in a sense because we don't know what's going to happen, what type of punishment he's going to get. But at the same time, this fixture makes you think, what if Paquetá had joined Man City? How would he fit into that midfield? What could Pep have done with him? Would he be so worried about tackling and defending, or would he have even more freedom? It's curious.
He's not a Pep player. Yeah. That's why I found it strange that he's a risk taker. He loses the ball quite a lot. He likes doing kind of sexy things. I mean, look at him dancing. He's a beautiful man. And whereas Pep, I guess what Pep did with Grealish. Just try and find.
Dancing do Paquetá.
Yeah.
He's got his own like moves. Yeah. Just look it up. He's got liquid hips.
And better than Moyes' moves.
If you would believe it, Paquetá is an even better dancer than Moyes. And his wife, and they do cool videos of dancing together. Yeah, he's got so much sauce about him, and that's why
new favourite hammer, Benji?
I love him. I really do love him. Yeah, I think Mikel Antonio will always be my favourite hammer.
Okay.
But he reminds me of like pre-City Grealish, so obviously he can be moulded. He's got this joy and kind of expression about him, which you don't get that as a Man City player.
We had you as a guest just after West Ham had beaten Chelsea at the London Stadium with that fabulous goal from Mikel Antonio. And at the time, I think you felt that was very much a case of a blind hen pecking some corn. But he performed brilliantly in the following game against Brighton, as you mentioned. Do you think that we are also experiencing a bit of a Mikel Antonio renaissance this season?
I hope so. And quite possibly. Mikel Antonio, when he's on it, he's a fairly unique sort of Premier League centre forward. There's not many better than him. So if we can get that out of him whilst his body is still held together, then fantastic. We'll see. And actually, I think it's helped that there was quite a lot of talk about bringing in another striker to give him competition, because he's slightly upped his game since then.
Speaking of bustling physical centre forwards, of course, City have one of their own. Here's some curious stats about Erling Haaland's, for it is he, match day performances so far this season, because they've exactly mirrored what he did last season. So last year, match day one, he got a brace. This year, the same. Last year, he got no goals on match day two. This year, the same. Last year, he got one goal on match day three. This year, the same. And last year, on match day four, he got a hat trick.
What did he do on five?
And what does that mean?
What did he do on match day five, Benji?
Oh, bollocks, was it a hat trick?
It was. That's remarkable, though, isn't it? He is a machine.
He's probably just decided he fancies doing that. I mean, you can kind of just see it. Like, this would be a funny quirk. We've broken every other record.
What do you think about City then, Charlie?
Yeah, I think as Benji says, it definitely looks like their biggest test so far. It's always hard to go against them. I mean, I've made this comparison before, but with him fresh from winning the US Open, Djokovic, Man City, to me, are so similar. They're just this winning machine, and I'd never really bet against either of them. So I'd expect City to find a way. But I certainly think, like last season, this was the opening game of the season, and Haaland scored twice, didn't he? And it was pretty comfortable. I think it'll be closer than that. But I do think City will probably edge it.
Okay. And I'm interested to see Phil Foden's development. He did really well now in the international break, and this always transfers back to what they do in the club. So, yeah, and the combination with this Erling guy you mentioned.
This Erling guy.
Yeah.
But it's true what you say. They took Brighton apart on the break, and there are similarities between them and City. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I still, ultimately, Pep seems to just find a way. It's like the he's almost had a different formation for each game of the season so far. Like the opening game, they against, is it Sheffield United their first game? No, Burnley their first game.
Oh, sorry.
They had that kind of zero whip. They played through the middle. Next game against Sheffield United, it was sort of classic Grealish on the wing. When he started at City, it was like fullbacks pushing up into midfield. Now it's like four centre-backs across the back. Like, he's just
The high lines, they are even higher.
Yeah.
Ederson is almost in
he's
midfield.
Trying to complete football. Like, he's trying to win in every possible way.
But certainly that Sheffield United game, with the Blades low block, if they'd had the kind of counter-attacking punch, because they kept that goalless for a long time and then put, I think, even equalised in that, or certainly pulled one back in the time.
And then City found a way. I think
they found a way, but there's four teams right behind them who, if they do slip up, will be rubbing their hands with glee. Liverpool, who will be at Wolves in the early kickoff on Saturday. Interestingly, Liverpool have failed to win any of their six early Saturday kickoffs last season, but they are on that 15-game unbeaten run, the longest in the Premier League. Spurs, who will be hosting Sheffield United themselves Saturday at 3. A win there would make this Spurs' best start to a season since 1965. And the other team right behind City are Arsenal, of course, who are at Everton. That's Sunday at 4:30, which should be easy enough, right?
Absolutely not. That's been their bogey ground of the last few years. Goodison for Arsenal. Arteta's lost 3 out of 3, though.
Yeah, 3 out of 3, including Sean Dyche's first game in charge of Everton. When was that? Back in February?
In February. Yeah.
Why is that? And does it have any relevance to this weekend?
Yeah, I don't think it's a coincidence. I mean, Goodison is probably one of like the last grounds that still can have a real intimidation factor for visiting teams. And I think that has... I mean, to take those three defeats in context, one was when Arsenal were in the midst of that horrific run in December 2020, where they lost 5 out of 7. Then there was one just before Aubameyang, I think it was Aubameyang's last game, actually, and they lost, having been ahead for most of the game, conceded 2 late goals. And then last season was when Arsenal were off the back of beating United 3-2. They had 50 points from 19 games and looked borderline unbeatable. Everton, Dyche's first game. And they just sort of got done. I mean, Calvert-Lewin was able to play that game, which made an enormous difference. And I think if Everton are going to win again on the weekend, they'll probably need him fit.
What's his fitness status?
Well, he hasn't played, I don't think, since he suffered that quite nasty injury in, I think, what was Everton's second game? He made such a difference because they could play up to him. And
has
he kept
Beto
the ball.
Taken his place, though, now?
Possibly, but I imagine if he's fit, and that is a big if, you'd have to play Calvert-Lewin in this game, given what he did to Arsenal last season. And they have the three central midfielders who I imagine will play again, who just bossed Arsenal around. So I think it is a big test. I think if they could come through this, it would say a lot about where they're at.
Everton, as you were hinting, Benji, are due something. Beto, who's only played one game but has already made more dribbles than any other Everton player this season. They are the team that underperform most on their XG. Out of all the Premier League sides, according to the XG model, they should have scored 5 goals more than they had.
Yeah, they haven't looked awful.
Apart from finishing.
Yeah, exactly. Like I do feel like there's something in Beto. Really, I know we've already talked about him. He reminded me a little bit of that kind of Mikel Antonio-style striker who is... very busy. He's physical, but he's actually got the quality. He can dribble. I'm quite optimistic that he could be part of the solution.
Against Sheffield United, actually, they could have won that match.
They should have won that match.
Yes, yeah. Even though Pickford had a brilliant display and he was very important in that. And yeah, no, they haven't looked awful, but they haven't won.
McNeil to come back. They got Harrison from Leeds. But I think McNeil was on the bench and came on in the last game. So I think Everton will be fine.
I think this is this is said about a lot of games, but I do think it is one where whoever scores first is so crucial. Because
really?
I think if Everton go ahead, I think it'll be a really difficult ask for, because the fans will be so up for it. They'll really be behind the team. Everton are very, you know, what they did last season anyway, once they went ahead in this game, they never really looked like conceding.
I feel like Arsenal are very good at going behind and coming back.
They are, but I think if Arsenal could go ahead... quieten the crowd a little bit, I just think it would make an enormous difference.
Will Havertz play again?
I think he will. I think there's a lot of belief in him from Arteta. He trusts that he will get the best out of him once he kind of works out what he's doing. I mean, he's become this massive punch bag already, which I think is maybe a bit unfair. I mean, he's played 4 games.
I'm not sure it is, man. Like, sometimes I wonder if like the wisdom of the crowd with Havertz is maybe right. Like, he's been here for 3 years now. He's played like 100 odd Premier League games, and no one's worked out what to do with him. Like, I do wonder if there is a slight bit of like managerial arrogance there from Arteta, thinking, "Oh, don't worry, we'll work it out." And I also think he's actually, his biggest crime, Havertz, is that he's in the position that Declan Rice, I think, should be playing in, like more box to box, and Partey should be tucking in where Declan is right now and get a proper right back.
But I think the guy he's replaced, Granit Xhaka, a year or so ago, everyone would have been saying the same thing about Xhaka. Like, who is this guy? You know, he's useless. He can't play defensive midfield. Arteta did find a way to get the best out of him, playing in a position that no one thought he'd thrive in. So I imagine he thinks he can do something similar.
All managers, all Chelsea managers, all of them who work with Havertz, plus Arteta now, they all say that he's incredibly smart, that like his vision of the game is really interesting. So there is something there. And considering all the amount of changes that Arteta did in the team during the season, he will be very useful in this context. But yeah, we're still waiting. See.
I do think the way he looks and carries himself doesn't help him as well. Like he has a little bit of the Ozil kind of
language.
Yeah, he can look a bit like he doesn't care because he's not like all hustle and bustle.
No, for sure. And that has an impact. But the fact that when you have clean-cut chances that fall to him and he consistently misses them and they turn out to be crucial, what would have been crucial goals, I think that's probably the biggest count against him. Briefly, are Liverpool at Wolves and Spurs at home to Sheffield United, they're going to win their games?
I think Spurs will. Liverpool, I'm not sure. I think Wolves again have maybe been a bit better than results suggest.
Okay. We'll see this weekend. Next up, let's talk about Man United.
Hi everyone, David Ornstein here, and I want to tell you about The Athletic's new bite-sized podcast, The Daily Football Briefing. If you're one of those people who are just too busy for a regular length podcast in the morning, this is right up your street. In just over 10 minutes, we'll bring you bang up to date with the biggest stories in football, all before you've finished your first coffee of the day. It'll be Matt Slater on a club's ongoing takeover saga, our club experts reflecting on big overnight matches, and let's be honest, me explaining those transfer stories that just won't go away. That's The Daily Football Briefing, every weekday morning, available wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Saturday at 3 o'clock. What's a lot going on Saturday at 3 o'clock? One of the things is at Old Trafford, Man United hosting Brighton. United, arguably now the underdogs in a fixture like this. No, actually, Brighton have won their last three Premier League meetings against United. Natalie, you've seen Ten Hag's side a couple of times this season, the Spurs and Arsenal defeats. Mm-hmm. What have you noticed about them?
I think there were two different games, very different types of defeats, because just a matter of centimeters, we wouldn't be talking about Man United in the same way with the Garnacho goal against Arsenal.
I hear what you're saying, but equally, matter of centimeters with the Wolves or a matter of a different VAR call, they wouldn't have picked up 3 points there.
Yes, no, definitely. And I think with Man United, I'm very interested how Ten Hag's going to figure out his attacking choices now with the Sancho situation and the Antony situation. Antony's not going to play. Is Sancho going to play? If Sancho's not playing, who will play in this position? Will he play Garnacho on that side of the pitch because it's not his side of the pitch? Or will he change the formation and maybe, I don't know, put McTominay on midfield? Because everybody's been talking about this possibility. Everybody but Ten Hag. Everybody's been talking about this possibility and change to kind of like a 4-4-2. With Rashford and Holland possibly starting his first game. So there are a few options that he can show against Brighton. But there is this, I don't know, we talk about Man United being such a mess out of the pitch. And it's not that they're a mess on the pitch at all. But it doesn't look, if you look at the progression of Ten Hag's work last season, this season should have started differently.
No, you're not seeing that progression.
Yeah, in these first matches, not as much as I thought they would show, because they showed some very positive things last season. So I was expecting Man United to just keep on that.
One of the areas in which they seem to have gone backwards is Casemiro's form.
Yes.
What's that about?
Yeah, and this is why everybody's mentioning McTominay a lot.
Right.
And yeah, there are a lot of people saying that Casemiro is not showing the same intensity at the start of the season compared to last season. against Arsenal, he was very efficient. And I think on the first match of the season, there was a lot for him to take care of. And I think they kind of adjusted that, but it's not there yet. I think the expectations with Casemiro also are very high, especially when you're playing on a midfield with Eriksen, with more freedom and not the same physicality as Eriksen years ago, which is absolutely normal. And I think it's kind of like Casemiro has to make up for everything that's not working at Man United. So I think in a way he's a bit exposed, not only tactically, but in this sense of making up if defensive is not working really well or injuries or things like that, Casemiro has to make up for that. And if the midfield is not showing fluidity, Casemiro has to make up for that. So,
and every international break, McTominay turns into Yaya Toure.
Yes. And there's two, thank you, yeah.
And there's two more of those before the end of the year. So poor old Casemiro. But I was thinking in Ten Hag's defense, since he's been there for the last two seasons, there's been a lot of sort of stink around the club. Like, obviously, mm-hmm, there was like, yeah, the Ronaldo stuff last season. This year, there's been Anthony, obviously, there's Jadon Sancho. And of course, all the sort of furore around Harry Maguire at the moment. So, like, quite a lot of distraction there. The takeover not happening in the background, which I was thinking about as I was washing my hands with Ineos hand wash in the Athletic toilet. Yeah, yeah. he's not had just a smooth run of like fully available players, no controversy. So it's mitigating.
Yeah, am I right in saying there's been something of a rapprochement, to use the like Pré d'Avignon.
Thank you. Putting in terms I'll understand.
Between Ten Hag and Jadon.
I'm not sure. I mean, The Athletic have done various reports on kind of the background to it and all of that. And I think it is a really interesting
situation.
He deleted the tweet. Yeah.
What was the tweet that he deleted?
The one saying that I've been scapegoated.
Oh, I see. Okay. Basically.
With a lot of exclamation, quite incongruous exclamation marks.
How many exclamation marks?
Quite a few. I have this thing where quite often footballers and famous people will use exclamation marks in a way that I find really quite odd.
Okay.
So it would, you know, it might be like someone's died or something, and it would be like RIP exclamation mark, like we'll miss you. And I'm just like, that feels a little bit sort of, an exclamation mark to me is more joyful.
Yeah, it's bouncy.
Yeah. Yeah,
that, is it? I think so, yeah.
Mostly, RIP mostly. Exclamation mark.
Yeah. See, the bouncy or angry, it's not.
Yeah.
It's
you want it to be measured.
Yeah.
And thoughtful.
Yeah.
What punctuation would you use then? Dot, 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 R-I-P.
I think full stop, or it might not even need one.
Yeah,
might
I agree. Not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is
it's a full stop. Yeah.
Or is it? I guess that's a question for another question. Day.
Think about that on Saturday.
But Sancho. No, I think with United, watching the game where they lost to Spurs a few weeks ago, they reminded me a little bit of where Conte's Tottenham were this time a year ago, whereby the results aren't terrible. And they'll probably win enough games to, I don't know, at this point, get fourth, something like that. But there's a bit of a joylessness. Like, you don't really see a kind of a week-to-week feeling of massive progress. And if you look at last season, they did go on one very good run, United, but it was generally against pretty weak opposition. Like, their record against good teams, especially away, is terrible.
Right.
I don't know. I find, like, I know when Spurs were looking at Ten Hag in summer of 2021, he didn't come across particularly well in a sort of, you know, in like a way Postecoglou can like unite a club. I think Ten Hag is a lot more serious, and that's fine.
Right.
But I don't know. Yeah, it just doesn't seem a whole lot of fun right now.
Doesn't, does it? Brighton, they're fun.
They're great fun.
Three goals a game.
Exclamation marks with them.
Absolutely. Will United provide a full stop to that run, etc., and so on?
Yeah, it's a really interesting game, this one.
And you think
to like last year when Brighton beat them on the opening day, and that was still at the time where Brighton were like springing surprises. Mm. Now a year on, yeah, they feel like the sort of the team with the upper hand.
Yeah. Brighton to take it? Natalie?
I'm interested to see how Brighton will deal with this whole protagonism that they have taken since last season and now, and people are talking, is Brighton going to qualify for Champions League? I mean, they have been doing a good job for seasons in a row now, for years, but now it's serious, you know, it's serious stuff.
The hunter become the hunter.
Yes.
It's the big test when everyone knows you're brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, last year, yes, it was a bit of a surprise that De Zerbi not only picked up where Potter had sort of left off, but improved them. Mm-hmm. Now, I thought everyone at Brighton was going to have a disappointing second season this year, especially like Mitoma. I thought everyone now knows about Mitoma, and he's been brilliant, and Brighton have been brilliant. Like I think you just sort of have to consider them established now.
But I do think as well on Casemiro, he is that sort of single pivot role that he's doing. That's really demanding, as you mm-hmm. said. You know, when you've got, you know, what they want to do is play with Mount and Fernandes. That is asking a lot of anyone. I mean, Mount's an interesting one as well. When he's fit, I guess he can play over on the right. But I was thinking about Mount, and we may go on to Spurs, but just the comparison between Mount and James Maddison, who are playing basically the same position. Mm. Mm-hmm. And Mason Mount, who you kind of need a degree in counter-pressing to appreciate how good he is, whereas Maddison is kind of, it's all there. It's goals and assists, it's skills, it's swagger. Mm. And Maddison costs quite a lot less than Mason Mount. So, yeah, I just was thinking, like, that is, I'd be really curious to see how well Mount does.
How many exclamation marks would you give Maddison start to the season?
A few.
I would too.
Oh, yeah. I would give loads. So much fun. Yeah. Yes. Because I have this theory that exclamation marks is just either one or three.
Ah, really?
No. Yes. You're quite an exclamation mark person, I would say, by the way.
Yeah, oh, yes,
do you ever
I am.
No stranger to an exclamation
yes,
mark.
Yes, yes, no, definitely.
Do you ever mix them up, throw in a question mark in there? Yeah?
Yeah.
Just like, what the? No, for sure.
Yeah, but that is good. I mean, Mount is so not an exclamation mark player.
Right.
He's a kind of semicolon.
I'd put exclamation marks and question marks on the fee that Spurs paid for James Maddison. So £40 million, exclamation mark, question mark. Like Cole Palmer costs more.
Yeah.
Like that crazy. Is an unbelievable
He's
steal.
Having so much fun. He's bossing the start of the season like a roast dinner. To use his own analogy. Yeah. And I mean, very briefly, Charlie, Sheffield United, you feel he'll have fun with that one as well, will he?
Yeah, I really think Spurs will win that game. I mean, you would say, I guess, typically this is the kind of game they might struggle with where suddenly the expectation's there and then a team's going to come and sit deep and make it difficult for them. I just think they've got too much about them at the moment. And if they do win, that sets up next weekend's North London derby very, very nicely.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, all they right. could go in both on 13 points. And it would be so interesting because Spurs, they beat United, but their games, you know, they haven't had a test like that away at Arsenal would just be a really good bellwether of where they are.
Without Kane as well.
Without Kane.
Without Kane. All right, next up, let's talk about that international football again.
Hi, I'm Ayo Akimolere, host of the Athletic Football Podcast. And I've just been joined by Adam Crafton and Dan Sheldon to discuss whether there's any way back for Jadon Sancho at Manchester United, following his public fallout with manager Erik ten Hag. Available now on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places. Just search the Athletic Football Podcast now.
We're all driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. According to their own survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Remember the last time you were hiring and how slow and overwhelming it was? Well, you don't need to go through all that again. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent. And because you listen to the Totally Football Show, Indeed is going to give you a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/totally. That's Indeed.com/totally. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed at Indeed.com.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Sports Podcast Awards Soccer Podcast of the Year.
Natalie, so last time we spoke to you, Brazil had just exited the World Cup in Qatar in untimely fashion.
Do you want some salt to put in that
wound? No, I mean, you know, it happened, so at least you got there, unlike some nations. This week, they got their campaign for the next one underway.
Yes,
with two victories. 5-1 against Bolivia, 1-0 against Peru. So everything going well under Genise, the new manager.
Yes, everybody's very excited about him, actually, because he has this very inventive style of play, and he's a very smart manager. Of course, there was a bit of controversy because he keeps his job at Fluminense, and he takes over the national team while Brazil is maybe waiting for Ancelotti. So it's a bit of a messy situation. But with the good start against Bolivia and against Peru, people kind of calmed down. And Brazilians, they really like Diniz because he's been doing such a brilliant job at Fluminense. And they play in a very exciting way. And in Brazil, of course, it's not only about winning, it's the way you win.
Excellent. Two goals for Neymar against Bolivia, which now means that he's Brazil's outright top scorer, overtaking Pelé, which I think to most people feels wrong. How do they feel about that in Brazil?
79 goals. Yes. Well, I think it's always mixed feelings about Neymar, but this time everybody knows he plays so well for the national team. All the controversy is regarding PSG and Saudi Arabia and his club career, but his career with the national team is like, it's absolutely brilliant.
Speaking of people who play well for the Seleção but not so much for their club, who am I going to talk about now?
Richarlison.
Yeah, Thomas Ricalas says he appears to only come alive for the national team. Is there a place at all for him in the Premier League?
I think there is. And I'm a Richarlison believer.
Yeah, I know.
Yes, I know. And Brazilian, most Brazilians are as well. They all love Richarlison.
So but why is it that he comes across to Brazilian fans in a way that maybe he doesn't over here?
I think Richarlison is a very emotional person. He has a very emotional personality, and we've discussed this a few times. And he actually gave an interview after the Peru match saying that he will seek psychological help because of things that have been happening in his life in the past 5 months. So I've spoken with people from his camp. And basically, there was a situation involving his agent's personal life. And Richarlison is very close to his agent. It's not just a professional relationship. They've been together for years. He helped him, he and his wife, the agent's wife, they helped him establish himself here in England. And they have a really very close relationship. And Richarlison all of a sudden got mixed up in these problems that his agent was facing with his wife. And then it came to money. And when you have footballers, and this is very common in Brazil, who can't manage their careers or have problems with agents or managing careers, a lot of other people come around and it just became a mess for Richarlison. So you have that and you have an emotional person. And it all came together and he has been pretty bad in the past few months. So this is why he's going to seek psychological help.
Right.
And
which, I mean, I guess probably quite a few players do. It was interesting to see him come out and say it like that.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's so impressive. I think that makes me a Richarlison fan as well, because it is such a fantastic thing for like elite sports people to just come out and say, yeah, I'm going to go and speak to a psychologist because I'm not in a good headspace.
Especially in the context of Dele Alli. You know, that people have such short memories because something like that happens and we all applaud him. And then within, the next breath, we're slating a player about a situation.
We've got Harry Maguire coming up next.
Well, exactly.
Yes, exactly. No, but he's very genuine. Very genuine. So this is why I still believe, because why he plays so well in Brazil, because in Brazil he feels loved, he feels embraced, and that really transferred to his game.
Do you think he feels embraced in Spurs? Because he's kind of been the one disappointing note in the start of the season.
Yeah, I think he can. I think, and he's got loads of support, like all his teammates. After, I think it was the Bournemouth game where, again, he didn't score. And he really looked visibly upset and pissed off, even while he was still playing. Like, honestly, you could see there was just a level of petulance. You know, they were 2-0 up, but he hadn't scored and he felt disappointed with his performance. I think Postecoglou has been very supportive. And he's constantly said this thing about how, doesn't matter about not scoring. As long as you're doing the right things, working hard for the team.
Kind of does matter, though, if you're... It does. Occupying that place in the team, you get one goal in a season.
Well, yes, that clearly was not ideal. Right. But so far this season, Spurs have scored enough goals. They get, they're spreading them around. And it's all part of the, trust the process stuff, that if you keep working hard, keeping the right things, the goals will come. And and so after that Bournemouth game, all his teammates were really supportive of him. A lot put out messages on social media saying, you played really well, et cetera, et cetera.
And I'm very interested to see how his relationship with Ange is going to develop, because Richarlison played well in the national team because he had a great relationship with Chichi, and now Fernando Diniz is the same profile. He's very close to the players. And at Watford as well with Marco Silva. He loved Marco Silva. He had a really nice spell there. And with Ancelotti at Everton. So there is this common factor in the relationship that he develops with the managers players in positive moments of his career.
Uncle Ange, surely.
Yeah.
He's the right sort of guy, you'd imagine.
I think Ange will be great with him, but maybe in a slightly different way to what people think. Like, he's got a lot of emotional intelligence, Postecoglou, and I think he will work out what Richarlison needs. But Postecoglou isn't this kind of...
He's not as cuddly as he looks.
No, he's not. No. He's seen as this kind of avuncular figure. He's not really. And he actually is quite distant from his players, generally. He said before he basically has never had more than like a one-minute, one-on-one conversation with his players. He keeps
really?
It.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he has this whole thing where he doesn't want to get too emotionally involved because he doesn't want it to cloud his decision-making. Mm. But I do think he has the emotional intelligence to say, okay, in this instance, Richarlison needs, you know, a bit more of the kind of cuddly approach. And I was talking to someone who played up front for Ange previously, and he said he was really good at reassuring him and saying that message of, don't worry.
Speaking of people who have scored as many international goals as Pele, welcome to the club, Romelu Lukaku. That feels entirely natural, doesn't it? 77 goals for him now. Top scorer in Euro qualifying. He's got 8 for Belgium. He got 2 in 3 minutes against Estonia since our last pod as Belgium rumble on towards Germany 2024. Level with them in their group, though, are Ralf Rangnick's Austria. Remember Ralf Rangnick? Flying with Austria after their mighty 3-1 win away in Sweden. Portugal, don't know if you saw their result against Luxembourg. Luxembourg were being touted by a Matt and Co on Monday's show, but promptly lost 9-0 to Portugal. And that was Portugal without Cristiano Ronaldo.
He must have been furious.
Can you imagine? He was suspended. And you know what's been said back in Portugal, because everybody had a party without him.
By the way, just very quickly, talking of international strikers with a surprising number of goals, Mitrovic is now on 55 for Serbia. Isn't that kind of crazy? Wow. Got another couple this weekend. Like, he is a prolific international striker.
Mm. Magnificent. 55 in how many, Benji?
83. It's amazing.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Extraordinary.
Yeah. Presumably now they play more games and there's a bigger disparity between the good and the bad, because they seem to be such a disproportionate number of modern-day players with tons of international goals.
As many goals as Pele.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
But is it just that football's getting better and better?
And more high-scoring.
The gulf is maybe getting wider.
Pele would just be another forward, do you think, in these days?
Well,
I do actually think that.
Neymar.
Yeah.
Yes.
Does not get the respect he deserves. And I think Michael Cox wrote a piece around this. Not just at an international level, like we know that he's now up and above, but even at, you know, in a domestic level, I think people forget about the season. I think it was a lockdown season he had for PSG, where he almost single-handedly won them the Champions League. Like, he's an elite player, one of the best footballers on the planet in the last sort of 5-10 years. And I think Michael's point was that he kind of gets thought about as like curl-on, as a bit of a kind of like, an entertainer, a party trick.
I love curl-on.
Or even like the guy Natty was coming up with him was Lucas Moura, similar level, you know, they were a similar age and both were seen, weren't they, as being like great future players. Well, look at the career, you know, Lucas Moura's not had a bad career, but I mean, I've always found this really weird. I thought Michael's piece was great. I wrote a piece in 2018 after Liverpool play PSG in the Champions League, and Steve McManaman on commentary did not stop whinging about Neymar's sort of play acting and not tracking back and all of these things. It was just like, enjoy the player. And he did stuff in that game that was incredible, because he's amazingly talented and fun to watch. I think the way people view him, people aren't able to separate what they think of him as a person.
Yeah, he's annoying.
And that's fine. You can find him annoying. You can disagree with his politics. But as a player...
There's a title that with the under-20s Brazilian national team that was very hyped at the time in 2011. And that team was, I'm looking at the lineup, and they had like names like Casemiro, Neymar, Lucas, but they also had names that really did not make it. Like Danilo was there, but Bruno Vini, Juan Jesus, Alexandro was in that team, Fernando, William José. So if you look at that generation, nobody came even close to Neymar. And it was a very hyped generation. Right. Everybody was talking about that team at the time. And if you see what happened to Neymar.
He won the Olympics. Like, he's got plenty on the
belt. And you mentioned that when you were in Qatar and Brazil went out. Sorry to bring it up again. But Neymar, that goal Neymar scored. If Brazil win that game and, let's say, go on to win the tournament, that goal is being talked about as one of the great goals in World Cup history, I think. Yes. It was incredible.
Fez o toque para Rodrigo. Bate, Neymar. Bate pro gol. Insistiu, Neymar. Escapuliu. Bateu. Gol! Gol! Gol!
other international talking points from the last few days. Rudi Völler debuted, replacing Hansi Flick as Germany manager. His Mannschaft beat France 2-1 in a friendly. Holders Italy got their qualification back on track, sort of. They had a 2-1 win over Ukraine at San Siro, with Fratesi scoring twice for the Azzurri, and Luciano Spalletti's second game in charge, his first win. They stay 6 points behind England, level with Ukraine and North Macedonia, but they have a game in hand on both of those two. Spalletti's predecessor as Italy boss, meanwhile, Roberto Mancini, had a disastrous start to his Saudi Arabia tenure. They had a couple of games up in Newcastle, of course, and lost both of them, Costa Rica and South Korea. As for England, well, not far north of Newcastle, on Tuesday night, was it? Tuesday night, they burst Scotland's bubble with that 3-1 win at Hampden, which was kind of the Jude Bellingham masterclass.
Yeah. Showdown.
Yeah?
No, it's it was incredible, and it's going to be really entertaining to see Jude Bellingham develop this really ridiculously offensive skills and freedom, actually, because at Real Madrid now, with his ridiculous start, man, he's playing Real Madrid. It's probably the biggest club in the world, and he feels like he's home already. Yeah. And he has all this freedom, and this also transferred to his game in England.
6 goals in 6 games for club and country this season, and the number of assists that he was providing.
Oh, that superb assist on Tuesday night. Yeah, I mean, it's great to have a non-English person in Natalie to hype him, because, you know, that's kind of what we do. But even going beyond that, I mean, that England team, it does look really, really good. I don't think that's being jingoistic. You know, you look at that, you could have a midfield three of Rice, Foden and Bellingham, and then a front three of Rashford, Saka, Kane, with a number of players not getting into that team. I know defensively maybe there are some issues, but that's a really, really
that midfield is
team.
Great. That kind of like encapsulates the kind of Southgate dilemma, and I think our relationship with Southgate, that midfield.
Yeah.
The midfield you just described of one holder in Rice and two forward players in Foden and Bellingham.
But that's how City play. You know, that's how a lot of teams
generally
play.
Generally speaking, that's not how Southgate
plays. Not at international level and not Southgate.
He'll put someone like Phillips or Henderson.
And Phillips was in on Tuesday.
Yeah,
he was actually
really
good. It was so depressing watching Calvin Phillips be good. So I was like, why didn't he leave?
I know.
Like, it's the same with Maguire. It's like, why do you want to just sit on the bench when you're clearly a talented player and you could flourish elsewhere?
But he'll believe Calvin Phillips that he will, like Grealish, work for him.
Come on, man. Like, especially with Maguire. It's like, Maguire's like, what, eighth choice centre-back at Man United. And Calvin Phillips just barely gets a game. They've just bought Kovacic. He's just not going to play. So, like, why?
You'd like to see players like that go somewhere else, like Harry Maguire go to West Ham, for example.
Go anywhere. Go and play.
But he was a target for the Hammers.
Yeah. It would have been a bad move for him, because I don't think right now he's better than Aguero and Zuma.
Right.
But if he'd gone somewhere where he would have started every week, that is exactly the right thing for Maguire, who was clearly a good player, just in a real funk, you know.
Mm.
And actually, he wasn't that bad against Scotland. He was fine. I got an unlucky own goal.
Maybe was that unlucky?
Yeah, I think so.
I think if you're a defender and you stick your leg out like that, I think you're really asking for trouble.
It doesn't help with how he's perceived, certainly, as being sort of lumbering and clumsy.
Yeah, and Southgate, I mean, he just wasn't quick enough.
Southgate shouldn't have put him on. Like, Tomori's surely ahead of him in the pecking order. He then, like, really vociferously defended him after the game, making him more of a centre of attention.
Yeah.
Like, quite a bit of, like, late-stage football manager about Southgate at the moment with his defense of Henderson and all this kind of stuff.
Mm. Did it feel a little bit like when your dad's defending you, kind of like, Dad, shut up.
Your mother wanders into the playground.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop picking on my boy.
Yeah.
Not that ever happened.
But given the circumstances, I think it was, in a way, it was good for him to talk about how much of a joke, like the terms he used to talk about Harry Maguire, because it's too much. I feel so bad. As a neutral, I feel so bad for him. It's horrible. And people are being hypocrites talking about mental health and how players should speak up. And then Harry Maguire enters the pitch and he has to deal. Honestly, we were talking about Richarlison. I hope he has a really good therapist. Mm. And I'm not joking, because he needs help to cope with everything. You have social media. You have, of course, you have banter from the opponents, and that's part of football. But at the same time, it's too much. It's ridiculous. I feel awful for him.
I do think with him, what's happened is there's like basically there's always been like a snobbishness towards him, and what is basically punching down is now people feel legitimized because it feels like it's punching up because he costs a ton of money. He captained United. He plays for England, so he kind of feels fair game to people. In a way that, you know, and some people are just cruel to anyone. They don't care if they're punching down or punching up. But I think for a lot of people, it feels like, oh, great, we can just absolutely go in on this guy, which you wouldn't be doing if he was, you know, if he was playing for a lower level Premier League club or whatever. But it's as if it's fine to just go in on him as much as you want because he costs a lot. And
it's a mob.
Captain United.
It's a mob. And I do wonder if this game was the high watermark of it. Because I think the narrative has slightly changed, you know, maybe as it is in this room where people are actually talking about, come on, man, enough already with Harry Maguire. Like,
And what's going to happen now? Because you have two other international fixtures this year, and I don't think he's going to play that much at United.
Well, so my question is going to be, you mentioned England having issues at the back. Should they? Is there not enough other talent kind of emerging out there that this doesn't have to be?
In this game, I mean, sadly for Harry Maguire, I thought we saw Lewis Dunk doing the Harry Maguire role sort of better than we've seen Harry Maguire do it for quite a while. Like, I think Southgate is right, is that you need a Harry Maguire type next to John Stones. I don't see why that can't be Lewis Dunk. You know, incredibly consistent. He's playing for now an elite Premier League club, and he was pretty much flawless in that game.
Not gay.
So
as well.
Instead of everyone slamming Maguire for his performance, I can't see anybody is going to slam Dunk.
Fair. I wonder where that's going to be.
Sorry, we'll move on. So obvious that wasn't going to be a real question.
Let's get back to the Premier League.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Euro show coming up next Tuesday. We'll be looking ahead to the Champions League match day one. Which is coming up next week. The company of Alvaro and James and Julian and Rafa will be talking about all the big stories, a bit of Milan derby, and they're probably also Paul Pogba. Crikey, we're talking about careers didn't go the way you expected. Yeah. Paul Pogba now provisionally suspended after a drugs test. He did a Gaddafi, essentially. He tested positive for a game which he didn't play in Udine, which I can't remember which Gaddafi son it was who did that. Was it?
Yeah.
But, I mean, on a serious level, he could be facing several years of ban. And for a player who was really struggling to get his career back on track anyway, after the incredible start he had as a young player, this is really worrying news. We'll hear more about that on Tuesday anyway. Back in the Premier League this weekend, Fulham taking on Luton. The Hatters yet to take a point in the Premier League. They could become, I read, Charlie, only the second team in Premier League history to lose their first four games in the competition, their first four games ever, not just in a season, after Swindon Town 30 years ago, 93-94, 5,754-5, I think. and that was Swindon Town's one and only Premier League competition. It does still faintly blow my mind because I was away for that decade. It faintly blows my mind still that Swindon Town were ever roaming the fields of the Premier League.
Big time, Glenn Hoddle.
And conceded 100 goals.
In a single campaign. Glenn Hoddle was the manager who got
player
them
manager,
up.
I think, wasn't he?
No, didn't he then leave?
Oh, okay. Maybe
I think
wrong.
He left before that campaign started. Is that right, Charlie?
Yeah,
you'll
I think
know
so. Yeah, John Gorman was the manager, who was his assistant. Yeah, I mean, that season was actually the year before my football obsession started.
Okay.
I was living in Amsterdam, actually, in 93, 94.
Wow, that sounds a lot more interesting.
As a kid. Makes it sound as if I went over there sort of on my own steam. But yeah, it was the following season, 94, 95. But so I knew, I was kind of then, as I got into it, then, you know, looking back at what happened. And Swindon was always, until Derby came, I mean, Derby obviously got fewer points. Mm. So they replaced them as the kind of high watermark or low watermark, however you want to look at it. I mean, it was incredible. And actually, unsurprisingly, there is an Athletic long read on Swindon's mad season. Yes, because Stu James was an apprentice with Swindon Town at the time.
No way.
Yeah. So Stu was a really, really good footballer. And so he had the proper inside story and spoke to various players and things like that. I mean, it does sound like a proper madcap campaign.
It was John Moncur.
John Moncur, exactly.
Bonkers. You know the Paolo Futre story with him?
No.
Sorry, a bit of a tangent, but when Paolo Futre got to West Ham,
right.
Somehow Harry Redknapp had got him in, John Moncur was wearing the number 10, and Paolo was like, I'm not playing unless I wear the number 10. And it was a long, protracted negotiation. And in the end, John Moncur got 2 weeks at Paulo Futre's Portuguese villa in return for the number 10 shirt.
Well, that seems fair.
Yeah, pretty good. Futre smokes cigarettes in the toilets.
Have you been to Swindon?
No, but I'm regretting that, actually.
Yeah. I mean, they've had some amazing, don't get me wrong, they've had some remarkable stories along the way. Paulo Di Canio. Do you remember the Paulo Di Canio? Where's Fotheringham?
Kicking the keeper. That? Did he kick the keeper? Well, I've conflated two
probably
stories.
Probably he did, but we never saw
it. I think he took him off 21 minutes into a game. Yeah.
And then gave a fantastic post-game interview about it.
There is nothing wrong to change and a goalkeeper, especially if we don't talking about Czech. No? We're talking about Wes, 20-year-old, and now he did what he did today and go out in this manner because he's untouchable. That is mad. League One, West.
The greater Swindon story. Is this apocryphal, the Razor Ruddock story, where they sign Razor Ruddock and they can't play him because they can't find shorts big enough? He says that he's tried on about 90 pairs without finding any that fit him. So they have to send back to the kit manufacturer in Egypt to build essentially bigger shorts.
He had a proper trunk on him, didn't he?
Well, I think he put on to weight. That was the late stage.
That's later.
It was burgers on the toilet stage.
Because he was still, he probably would have been at Liverpool at this point. But it was, I mean, this Swindon team, they scored 47, which wasn't terrible. Only six fewer than Arsenal, who finished fourth that season.
And really?
More than 10th placed Villa. They put four past United in their two meetings. United won the double. So they were very attacking. It was just this kind of madcap thing. And I think it became very obvious very quickly that they were really out of their depth. But they really gave it a proper go. And I think it was one of those, you know, we had the time of our lives type years.
Nice one.
But they've not been back since.
I think Luton, I had this shuddering realisation when I was listening to the radio before the Luton-West Ham game. And like Nathan Jones was everywhere. And I was like, Nathan Jones is going to be the Luton manager again by the end of this season.
Do you think so,
Benji? I really do. Yeah, I think that's almost inevitable.
Because he had such a success in the Premier League last season?
Well, but he also, it is forgotten, was a huge part of Luton's rise. And if they carry on like this, Luton, you can't see them sticking with the manager.
And
Nathan Jones would be the natural sort of parachuted in guy, I think.
But Rob Edwards equally had a brilliant time with the Hatters in other divisions. I've so far been unable to replicate that in this. I don't know, it's a tough one. So they're going to be facing Fulham. Last time they met was Fulham clinched the championship title with a 7-0 win over the Hatters at Craven Cottage. That was in May 2022. Have you seen either of these sides in action, Natalie, this season?
Yeah, I've seen Fulham.
Okay.
I've seen Fulham-Arsenal. That was interesting.
Was it?
Yes.
What did it tell you about the cottages?
No, yeah. I really like Fulham's midfield options, and especially after they kept Palhinha.
Yeah, which, that is so big.
That is huge. Yeah. That's huge.
I mean, that's like their signing of the summer.
Yes, definitely. Even if it's just until January, you know, just enjoy every minute of it.
Right. I mean, how good was he that game?
He was incredible. Amazing. It was like three Palhinhas on the pitch. He just has this power. And William was injured for a while, but he should come back soon. And Andreas Pereira is having another really good season. So I really like this Fulham side. I like the way they absolutely know what they have to do and they embrace Marco Silva's ideas. When you talk to the players, and it's really clear how they engage with the manager and with the way they have to play. So, and now without Mitrovic, it's interesting to see the solutions that they're trying to find, and hoping that Raul Jimenez can go back to the scoring sheet.
Scored a couple for Mexico.
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah.
Did he really?
Nice to see.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting as well, talking about Paulinho, because I've seen it mentioned that he feels like the kind of signing that United used to make back in the day when they would pick off
Fulham players.
Not necessarily Fulham players, but those kind often. Of. Well, yeah, some, like Louis Saha, for instance.
Chris Smalling, I think.
Christmas morning.
Van der Sar.
Yeah. Exactly. So those level, you know, those team, the kind of the best players from the mid-table. Mm. And Palhinha would kind of be exactly what they need.
Hmm. All right. Going to hustle through these remaining fixtures. But it sounds like Fulham for the win in that one. I mentioned some sides who are down in the kind of disappointment category at the moment. Four games in, it is early to draw conclusions. But Tom Harris in The Athletic does do an interesting piece this week in which he plots a graph with essentially expected goal difference on the Y, the vertical axis, and on the X he's got field tilt, which I've not come across before. Field tilt is that where you have your touches. The further forward you have your touches.
Say those words again.
Field tilt.
Field tilt is quite good. It's quite instructive, yeah.
But basically, so he's plotted field tilt on the X and expected goal difference on the Y, because they should be pretty instructive about how well your team is performing against the opposition, what kind of results they should be getting. And three teams are way out kind of top right where you want to be on this graph. One is Man City, duh. Another one is Arsenal. Uh-huh. And the third team is Chelsea. Chelsea, who by those metrics at least, should be doing far, far better. They're away at Bournemouth Sunday at 2 o'clock. Oh, by the way, the worst ranked teams on that graph were Fulham and Sheffield United, so, you know, for what that's worth. But I was just wondering, is this the game, do you think, Bournemouth-Chelsea Sunday 2 o'clock, is this the game when it all comes together for Pochettino?
I've been thinking for ages that Chelsea, I mean, I think under Pochettino they will do well. But yeah, for so long, I mean, under Potter as well, it was just like, okay, surely the dam's going to burst and they'll have a game where they do just put away some of those chances, and it just keeps not happening. That said, yes, I think Bournemouth could be that game.
Yes. Quick Bournemouth-related thing.
Yeah.
Question. What do you think the most common surname in the Premier League is?
Right now?
Yeah. I reckon Quizmaster Charlie might. Ooh. And it's by a distance.
And it's related to
the most common surname.
I think I know, or I can.
I like how Charlie's just,
we've just sent him to
racing.
His wine palace.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
No, Brooks.
Nope. Ah. I'll put you out of your misery.
Smith.
So you'd think it's Smith. There's two Smiths in the Premier League, I think. What I understand, there's a Smith Rowe as well. But
oh, no. Yeah. Oh yeah.
The most common surname in the Premier League is Traore. Five Traores currently in the Premier League. So you've got Hamid at Bournemouth, Benny at Sheffield United, Adama, our favourite at Fulham, and Bertrand at Villa. And Boubacar at Wolves, yeah.
Brilliant. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. And this is all relating to a weird thought about Hamid Traore, which is he was brilliant at the end of last season for Bournemouth. They then spent £20 million on him, and he's played like half an hour so far this season. So sort of they're trying to work out what the configuration of
does
forwards is.
Does he not fit in with Adeola Ball?
Who knows? Yeah, maybe not. I wonder if it was one of those loans with an obligation to buy that Iriola couldn't have done anything about it. Anyway, I thought he looked like a baller.
Chelsea have lost five of their last six away games in the Premier League, Charlie. However, their one victory in that run was away to Bournemouth. There you go. Alrighty. Natalie, do you want to say anything? Or would you rather comment on Newcastle, who are down to 14th, looking to end a three-game losing streak, at home to Brentford?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting run of fixtures for Newcastle finally, because they had a tough start. Their fixture list, they had this amazing start against Villa, and then they had City, Liverpool, and Brighton.
Right. Do you not see Brentford being...
It is a tricky game, but I think it's the type of game that Newcastle can show what we all are expecting from them this season. So their run now is much better. It's Brentford, which is a tough game, but compared to their start. Sheffield United, West Ham, another tough game. Palace and Wolves. So this is the fixture list until the end of October. So maybe now we'll get to see a bit more of Newcastle the way that we expected, and especially what Eddie Howe is going to do about his striking options, because Callum Wilson and Isak, they're both really good options, but Isak hasn't been scoring that much. Callum Wilson has, and you know,
I feel like we're still waiting for Bruno to come to the party this season as well. It doesn't look like quite, I mean, maybe Tonali is sort of, you know, eating his chips.
Yeah, that's true. And he's close to renewing.
Like a seagull.
Who has been coming to the scoring party, or as you put it, is Brian Mbeumo, with seven goals in his last seven in the Premier League. And he also opened the scoring for Cameroon.
Did.
against Burundi on Tuesday. So, woof.
With Newcastle as well, they got 15 clean sheets last season.
Yeah.
They were about second, I think, only to, weirdly, to Man United. They haven't kept a clean sheet this year. So, waiting for that defence to kind of shore up as well.
Wow. That game's going to be 5:30 on Saturday. Saturday at 3 o'clock, two teams that we never seem to give much attention to in the show, Villa and Palace. And then on Monday night, it's Nottingham Forest against Burnley. Yeah.
Can I say something about Villa? Can I come for the rescue? Okay, so...
sort of against policy, but yeah, if you must.
I was kind of disappointed the way Villa lost to Liverpool. Not losing to Liverpool at Anfield, but the way... Because there are interesting things happening at Villa this mm-hmm. season. Good signings, and they're playing European football as well now this season. And especially on defense, they have Diego Carlos back from injury since the end of last season. But now playing alongside Pau Torres, which is a defender that I really like to watch because he can progress well with the ball, help with the build-up. So there are a few interesting things happening at Villa. This is why I was kind of disappointed with the way they lost to Liverpool. It's not absurd to lose to Liverpool at Anfield, of course. But
was it the naivety? Do you think of the?
I think I was expecting them to be not so passive. Maybe.
Okay.
Of course, Liverpool really showed their game, but I'm expecting more personality from Villa and from Unai because I really like his work. On the other hand, you have Crystal Palace, who has been scoring a lot of goals.
Yeah.
So it should be an interesting fixture.
Okay, Palace, who do like to have a shot or two. Only Brighton and Spurs have made more shots in the Premier League this season. Forest Burnley is on Monday night. Rhys Cooper, if you're still listening, Rhys Cooper asking Natalie, how does she feel about the influx of South Americans at Forest and who will be the standouts? Says Rhys, is Murillo ready for the Premier League straight away and is Dominguez a perfect fit for the physicality of the league? How familiar are you with Murillo and Dominguez?
With Dominguez, a little. Uh-huh. I think he's a good fit in terms of physicality. Murillo played for Corinthians, okay. My team back in Brazil. So he's still very young, okay? He's not super young. He's 21, but he doesn't have that much experience playing professionally. He made his debut for Corinthians professionally this year.
Oh.
Yes, so he's not very experienced, but at the same time, he's very physical and he can play really well from the back. But I think it's going to take time. I think we have to be patient with Murillo, our boy.
Excellent.
Oh, and his story is really nice because he's a big Corinthians fan and he played for Corinthians. His father was a big Corinthians fan as well. And his dream was to see Murillo playing for Corinthians, but he died when Murillo was 10. And actually, that was the year that Corinthians won Libertadores in 2012, finally, because it was a long, long wait for us. And Murillo was born exactly 10 years before. So he was 10. It was his birthday, his 10-year-old birthday, when Corinthians won Libertadores in 2012.
Wow.
Yeah, which is really nice. And he's a defender, so he's big. He's physical, but take it easy on him. Yes.
Very nice. Well, that kind of sets us up for Premier League Match Day 5. Of course, we'll be back Sunday night, Monday morning with our thoughts on how the games actually turn out. But for now, it's many, many thanks to you, Natalie, for being with us. Benji, Charlie, producer Charlie, Rachel putting this out on our YouTube channel. And you, listener, have yourself a great weekend and we'll catch up with you next week.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.